You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Today's episode is all about burlesque in New Orleans. We'll explore a bit of the history and the current scene. Before we jump in, let me talk about all the people that make this show possible. First up is the Historic New Orleans Collection. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum, located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space. You can find it at hnoc.org/firstdraft. They have two special exhibits right now, and I want to talk about one. It's called Notre Dame de Paris, the Augmented Exhibit. It started back in November of 2022, and it continues through March 1st of 23. It's a really cool project. They hand you sort of a tablet, and you can go through the 850-year history of Notre Dame Cathedral. So you can go in the past and in the present, and you can actually see the reconstruction they're doing now. And they update it every couple days, so you can almost in real time see the changes. It's really hard to explain, and it is amazing, and it's a traveling exhibit, so not many places get it. So definitely go check that out. They have a second exhibit that runs through April, the middle of April, called French Quarter Life, People and Places. And that's a much smaller exhibit, but it is interesting. It's got about 25 different people's perspectives in different forms of media showing kind of life in the French Quarter, everyday life in the French Quarter in the past. So take a look at that. This next thing is not an ad. It's more of a public service announcement. The Historic New Orleans Collection is working with the LGBTQ plus Archives Project, and they have a call out for book proposals about the history of queer communities of color in New Orleans. It's really unique. The author of the proposal gets a book contract, and they're going to receive $10,000 in startup funding. The book is intended for like a general audience, and it's not, they're looking for more research rather than a memoir. Proposals should be submitted to Terry Simon at terry.simon@hnoc.org before March 1st. And I'll put a link in the show notes. I'm really proud of what they're doing there. One of the things we're going to talk about today is culture in New Orleans. And that's another part of culture in New Orleans that for many years wasn't documented, wasn't publicized, was ostracized. And I love that the Historic New Orleans Collection is working with the LGBTQ community to you know, not only preserve that information, but also give real money to someone in a book contract. As someone that has a book contract, that's a really hard thing to get. So I'm excited for them. With that, let's jump into the discussion. As I mentioned, today's episode is about burlesque in New Orleans. The art has a kind of a storied history in the city and in Louisiana, and thanks in large part to my guest today, has undergone a resurgence in the years, particularly since Katrina. We're going to get into all that and more, but first, welcome to the podcast, Trixie Minx. How are you?
I'm good. It was so hard not to say anything during that intro. The whole time I was like smiling and giggling.
You definitely could have.
Well, first off, all the stuff you were talking about sounds awesome. Like, I am going to check that out. That all sounds amazing.
I'm really, really excited about that project. We did an interview a couple years ago with a guy named Bobby Fiesler, who wrote a book about the Upstairs Lounge Fire called Tinderbox. And the Upstairs Lounge Fire was in the early 70s. It was a gay bar in the French Quarter that was attacked. And about three dozen people lost their lives there. There's been a fair amount written in recent years about the LGBT community. But, you know, again, when you combine that with people of color, I think that's a real underserved community and certainly the history. And like so many things in New Orleans, right, about culture, we enjoy our culture, but we don't always preserve it. So
yeah.
It's a cool thing.
Yeah.
As I mentioned before we came on, I have been wanting to talk to you for years, and there's no good excuse. You and I know plenty of the same people. But before we get into burlesque, a little bit about you.
Okay.
I did a little bit of research, and I know that you were trained as a ballerina, right?
Yes. Once upon a time, I was a ballerina. I broke my foot, ended up in New Orleans visiting a friend, and just fell in love with the city. It was not where I wanted to be, but the city like accepted me. And I was like, oh my gosh, how did I not know life could be like this? And that's sort of how burlesque found me as well. It was all by accident. I kept having people come into my life, like through actually class. I was taking classes at Loyola just to stay, like, you know, keeping my training going. And somebody there was like, oh, you should try burlesque. I was doing a small dance bit with the opera. I think they, I can't remember which one they were doing at the time, but like one of the opera singers was also a burlesque dancer. Was like, oh, you have to try this. And then there was even a ballroom dancer that had like, was trying to recruit me for a show. They were all like, oh, you're going to love this. I kept saying, no, I can't take my top off. What are you talking about? And now look at where we are.
Look at where we are. And speaking of that, we will be sure in the show notes to put links to all your social media.
Oh, thank you.
Where you are in various forms of undress. That's really funny, though, to hear that, you know. And I wondered about that. Like, how do you go from wherever you are in life to being willing to basically expose yourself in front of an audience every night?
Well, apparently it takes being in New Orleans. no, I truly think one of the things, there's a famous saying about ballet dancers or just dancers in general. And the saying is, a dancer dies twice. Most dancers, specifically ballet, have very short-lived careers. Mm-hmm. Mine ended in my early 20s because of an ankle injury, and that was it. But then, of course, you live your life as a, like, you know, a normal human being that doesn't dance on their toes. However, with burlesque, and I think this is part of the reason I love it so much, is it gave me a second opportunity to dance again. Mm. And one that was so much more body positive and mm-hmm. and beyond body, just like, you know, positive in so many different ways, where it didn't beat you down so much as build you up. And that's sort of how it came to be.
It was interesting reading about that because, so I have 11-year-old twins. Mm-hmm. Longtime listeners know that. And when they were itty bitty, they did ballet. And one of the things we were worried about, knowing others who had young girls mostly who grew up being in ballet, is the whole issue with positive body image and the high incidence of anorexia and eating disorders and all of that. And while we were very supportive of them, we were very kind of eyes wide open about that. And you do see a lot of that, people that say, hey, gosh, I did this and then I got hurt, very much like you, right?
Yeah, I think there's obviously a huge shift, I think, in a lot of things, just not just in ballet, but all over, where there's a lot more care and concern and compassion. However, ballet, for me, it was all about, like, what could I do to be the best dancer, the, you know, the strongest, the most flexible, the fastest, the thinnest even. And it wasn't the healthiest relationship of my life, but I am very grateful for what I have gained from it.
Right. And now you've turned it into this. Right?
I know. It's so funny. I grew up in Miami and they do this thing where once a year, they're like, all of our graduates from the school, this is what they're doing now. And they're not necessarily all in dance. Some of them are lawyers, whatever, have you, you know, but they're always like, can we post about you? I'm like, are you sure you want to post about me? They're like, yeah, we're really proud of it. I was like, well, go for it.
Well, and you answered several of the questions. And I think that point about New Orleans, I have this belief that, like, New Orleans just kind of seeps into your pores, like the humidity,
mm-hmm.
and it gets into you.
We call that the humidity.
Fair enough. And once it does, like, there's no getting that out, right?
No, it's, and I, yeah. Have you ever heard the saying, like, you get stuck in the Mississippi mud?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like New Orleans chooses you. You don't choose New Orleans. And there's a reason. I mean, the city, by all means of, like, you know, rhyme and reason, like, it should not be here. Oh, we're taking a picture. Just for those of you at home, we're taking a really cute picture.
That's right. Look cute, Trixie. Not that that's hard for you.
But I was going to say, I feel like with New Orleans, you either thrive and flourish or you get kicked out real quick. And it has no, like, you know, with all the hurricanes, the fires, and you name it, like, the city, it literally, I feel like it's a jalopy with, like, a heart of gold and, like, a cockroach behind the wheel. Everything's held together with, like, spit tape, one staple, and a dream. Yet it keeps moving.
Yes, it's hard to be here, right? It always has been hard to be here. Post-Katrina, it got harder to be here. Post-Ida, I think it got harder to be here. But you can't let it go.
Well, and I truly believe that's part of how burlesque with me and the whole Trixie thing came to be, because I had auditioned for a show just before Katrina. I had gotten accepted, but I had yet to perform on stage as a burlesque performer. I was still sort of nervous about it. Katrina happened. I stayed, but ended up having to evacuate after the fact. And when I left, I literally had a pair of tassels, because that was given to me once I got into the gig, being like, okay, so you got to figure this out. And so I remember being in some random hotel in Mississippi with a backpack that had all my birth certificate, my insurance cards, my like checks, books, all that stuff. Literally one change of clothes and two tassels that I was like, well, let's figure this out. I'm just like in a bathroom at some random like Mississippi hojo, just being like, well, we got nothing else to do. Let's go.
And I want to, at some point, circle kind of a little bit to the history of burlesque, but since you brought it up.
Apologies in advance to you and your audience. I am all over the place. I express myself through movement, but you have given me a mic, so you are going to get what you get. Well, it's a lot of love, but it's going to be all over the place.
And that was one of the challenges, thinking about doing a podcast about something that is so visual, right? Like, how do you do that? But I think that's a challenge for you and I, and that's a fun thing to do. The other thing that was interesting to me is, so for all practical purposes, you really got into burlesque and opened your first show right after Katrina.
Yes.
So didn't that like kind of all start with being handed these tassels and then being in a random hotel in Mississippi?
Sort of. Like, I think what the difference was is, and anybody who's been through Katrina, I think, feels the same way. It was very much, you either were not coming back to New Orleans, or if you were, you were committed. Like, mm-hmm. you were coming back and you were making a choice to really put roots in.
Yeah.
Because you had to. Nothing was easy. Everything was starting from scratch. So many things that had been around were just not there. Mm-hmm. And so you had to really step up. And I think that's what it was. To me, what Katrina did is, it, at the time, I was under the impression like, oh, you know, if I didn't make it out this week, I could do next week. And I felt that way about burlesque too. Oh, I got into the show, but I don't know if I was going to do it. I might not. And it was sort of this moment in my life that was, that made it very clear nothing is guaranteed. So if mm-hmm. you have an opportunity, why not take advantage of it? And for somebody that, me, I'm very cautious. I'm very, you know, timid by nature. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, let's do this. Like, screw it. Why not? Worst thing that can happen is I decide I don't like it and I stop. And then I did not expect this, admittedly. Sorry, I laughed so hard. But like, I truly did not expect it. But yeah, no, it really was Katrina that solidified my sort of decision to move forward. Mm. And then actually, I guess I don't want to jump ahead, but I was doing this show and hated it. Mm. I loved burlesque, but I hated the production I was working with, because I remember getting one, you know, again, that this ballerina in me wanted to be better, wanted to be the best, because it, to me, was so refreshing to have this whole art form, this whole form of dance mm-hmm. that was so positive and body positive. And so I went to my producer and I was like, hey, I want to get better. Like, what can I do? And he literally told me I should just be naked longer. And it sort of felt icky and gross. Right. I was like, ew, no. And so at the time, there was limited resources online. And so the only way you could really learn was through other people. Hmm. And we call them living legends. When you find older burlesque dancers that, you know, aren't necessarily performing, but you can talk to them, or just other performers. And so I kept going to people and being like, I know it can be more. I know it can. And I was really struggling with, do I continue with this show I'm not really feeling, or do I just quit? And my friends were like, no, just start your own. And so I just blindly went in with a lot of heart and lots of parts, and we just went for it. And well, that's how we started Flirted Tees, which actually still runs today, which is so crazy.
Right. So I want to get to that, but maybe what you just said is a good segue backwards a little bit. So I doubt, but I don't know, for people that are listening and don't have a clue, how would you define burlesque?
Oh, thank you for that. Burlesque is the art of tease. It is simply that, whether there is striptease, whether there's comedy, whether it's glamour, the whole concept is about making the audience feel something. And I truly feel, as a burlesque performer, and most live performers, I would imagine, have the same belief system, but with everything available online and on social media and just YouTube, et cetera, one of the beautiful things about live performance is that human interaction. And that is the interaction between the audience and the performer that makes burlesque so unique. But it's in the tease that mm-hmm. that's the real hook of it all.
And there is a long history in Louisiana,
oh,
right?
Yes.
And so you mentioned like getting to talk to sort of, quote unquote, my words, old timers. How much have you gotten to do that? Have you talked to people that did this in the 60s, 70s, even before?
I do. And actually, there's a convention that happens every year in Vegas called the Burlesque Hall of Fame Weekender, where we actually celebrate living legends. And I go there every June and I meet living legends and we talk. They have a night where they get to perform or just simply take the stage to speak. So I do it not as often as I'd like. Mm-hmm. Wild Cherry has since passed, but when she was here in New Orleans, we used to talk very often. I'm still sometimes in touch with her daughter. But yeah, and even then, it's so funny because it feels like such a long time ago, but even the Shim Shamettes, which was at the turn of the century, you know, the early aughts, a lot of them aren't performing, but I'm friendly with them and we talk about them a lot. And in fact, I spoke to one just, I think, 2 weeks ago, and their whole experience is amazing as well. So not like we're not, you know, no, we're not dating or anything, but I do talk to them all fairly regularly.
I think it's interesting. And if my friends at the New Orleans Collection, the Historic New Orleans Collection, are listening, I don't think they've done an exhibit about burlesque in years.
I know, listen.
And they should. Because I think going back to probably if people are familiar at all with burlesque and they think about Louisiana, they think about Blaze Starr, right?
Oh, of course. Right? How could you not?
But going easily back to the days of the Red Light District in Storyville, you know, striptease, or not just striptease, but burlesque played a big part in that. And I guess I should say, not even so much striptease, the sort of bigger meaning of burlesque about teasing in general and being flirty. And then obviously there was a lot of actual prostitution and things in the Red Light District. But Storyville had a lot of that component to it.
Yes, I wasn't there personally, but from what I understand, there was. And one of the things I think is actually very important to tie in as well is that the musicians, a lot of these musicians, I remember talking to one musician, I'm not going to say his name in case he doesn't want to, you know, have that part shared, but he was 18 years old and he was working on Bourbon Street at the burlesque houses. And that was his first gig. And now he's a famous musician that tours, you know, Europe and does what he does. But it was one of these things where it wasn't, they couldn't just press play on a speaker system. So every burlesque house had a house band. So it was keeping those musicians, and the same thing with the houses of quote unquote ill repute, the same thing. You still, you couldn't just turn on the TV. You had to have music going, you know, like,
Totally.
It was a vibe.
Yeah. It was all live music in those houses.
Yes.
And then Richard Campanella talks about, he has a great book called, it's about the history of Bourbon Street. And really in the 60s, 70s, even the 80s, there were a lot of burlesque shows all backed, as you're talking about, by live bands, right?
So
lots of people got their start there.
We were sort of jumping around all over the place, but when you were asking about the history, this may have been before we started recording, but I think what's interesting about the history of burlesque is that we have it sort of cut up into these different eras, and the golden era was the 1950s and 60s, and it's highlighted on Bourbon Street, the fact that you could have multiple burlesque shows side by side, and they did employ it. It was more than just the dancers that were being employed. It was the musicians, everybody else who ran, you know, the managers, the bartenders, the servers. And one of the things that it tends to be like the gold standard of what burlesque was, but I think it's because it's in our most recent recorded history. Beyond that, it's incredible. Burlesque is essentially what survived vaudeville, if you take it back even further. And what I think is so interesting, and, you know, anybody can do with this what they will, but the financial impact it had on the women that were performing. Like, back then, they had unions and contracts. And for somebody that maybe not be able to have a formal education or even the power, like back then, you know, a woman couldn't have a bank account. Like, but all of a sudden, there was a woman was able to, if she had enough, like, you know, chutzpah, and could sew a cute little costume and take the time to figure it out, she could really make a wonderful life for herself. And when I have spoken with the older burlesque dancers, they used to say how, like, upstairs it was like a nursery, like people take care of each other's kids. Like, it was a really nice sort of family environment. Obviously not for everybody, but for certain scenes.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to jump, you know, we are jumping around, but as we get into your history and what you've done, one of the things that I think is fascinating is your tie back to the music industry and what you've tried to do there. And so we'll get into that. But let's jump back again. So post-Katrina, one, I was just shocked. Like, you were doing this very soon after Katrina.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think about, I wasn't living here at the time. We had moved away. My parents were here. That was such a rough time, but people were looking for any kind of connection and entertainment. Even though the production maybe wasn't the best fit, what was that like in those first months?
It was exciting, and it was wonderful because I had mentioned this earlier, it truly gave me a second opportunity to dance. And for me, I didn't want to ever take that for granted. And even today, I still am so grateful every time I am afforded an opportunity to be able to perform, because it really is a gift. But I think that's what made it so special, is that at the time, there must have been like 6, maybe 10 dancers that were actually performing. There were 2 shows, but they were like, one was, you know, I think at Buddha Belly, which was the, I don't even know if it's still there, the laundromat.
Right, that, right, like, I think it is.
You know, it, that had like bands, and it was super cute. And then we had another show that was a little bit more professional, but again, the cast was just 4 people. It was, and it was this really wonderful time where everybody that was in town was like, well, what are we going to do? Let's do something incredible. Let's recreate what we've always wanted to do. And we basically just came together and started doing these shows. And I don't know, just I think back very fondly on that time, because I call it the MySpace days.
Right.
So again, like, it was sort of the blind leading the blind. A lot of people that just, you know, some of them had had previous experience. Some of them were coming from other different walks of life, which is one of the beautiful things about burlesque. Like myself, I'm a classically trained dancer, but I worked with other performers that were just seamstresses that make beautiful garments. So for them, it wasn't so much about the physical activity of the performance as the presentation, almost like a more modeling style. The same thing how some people are coming in from theatrical backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So they're more about the concepts and like the story arcs. Mm-hmm. But it was just really fun. We felt like it was sort of like Peter Pan, but with ladies.
Interesting. How difficult was it the first time you figured out how to put those tassels on and walk on a stage?
Well, it wasn't. I just remember it wasn't difficult to get the moving. What was difficult was the control. And also, based on my research, I am much, I'm better versed now, of course. And thank you, internet, for everything. I will, like, the internet is amazing. But at the time, I was told spirit gum was the only thing that would work. And admittedly, for people that don't know, if you're doing professional prosthetics, like for movies, like a fake nose, a beard, whatever, spirit gum is the way to go. However, the skin on that part of your body is extremely sensitive. So if you're going to be doing that regularly, it's not the best. At least it doesn't resonate with me. I now use double-sided tape. Huge fan of that. Think it's great. But I remember getting them on and just sort of trying to get it moving. And it was sort of blind luck at first. And then I finally figured it out. It's like, oh, if you stiffen the muscles. Oh, if you pull the shoulders back. Oh, if you articulate them at this. Oh, if I arch my back a little bit, I can get it really going. Or if my arms are up, that's awesome. And there's an actual technique and style to people that teach courses now. But at the time, again, it was me and my producer had just handed them and said, good luck.
So you mentioned, you know, pretty soon after getting into burlesque, you decided that you weren't really happy with the production and they were limited. So I think it's fascinating how you and others created a business out of this. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I had basically auditioned before Katrina. We never hit the stage. All the costumes were lost. We all came back. The show started December 2005, I guess. Yeah. So technically, I wasn't really on stage till 2006. I just found this out recently. I didn't mean to lie to anybody, but I've been like, I started in 2005, but like, that's just when I got in. We weren't performing regularly till 2006. But I didn't enjoy just sort of the what was going on with the show. Like, I still have respect for it, and I'm very grateful for that experience. But it wasn't where I wanted to go with it. I very much wanted to do more of a, I love the old school, you know, burlesque and vaudeville, like where it would be multiple showgirls and big feather headpieces and like people flying in the sky, variety acts, like all that just makes my heart, like even now I get excited.
Yeah, you can see it in your eyes.
I'm just, oh, I love it. And that wasn't happening in this show. And then there was another show that again was just a bunch of, at the time, Suicide Girls was a thing, which for those of us familiar with OnlyFans, Suicide Girls was sort of the start of that, but it was with a more sort of, I don't want to say goth, but just sort of alternative looking ladies could get on there. And it sort of combined with burlesque because it wasn't necessarily about just being naked, but it was more stylized into how they were doing it. And again, I think these are people just sort of, history always sort of circles around and repeats itself. And these were people sort of figuring out their version of burlesque. But anyways, we just got started back with it. And what I recognized right from the start is when I started my own show, it was because I wanted to do, I started with Fleur de Tis, which like I said, runs today. And I just remember I wanted to do it better than the other shows I had participated in. I wanted people to get paid. I wanted them to be treated respectfully. I wanted us to have proper rehearsals, not just be in a bar and jump around for 10 minutes before the show started. Like that came from my dance background and training. I didn't think it was a hard ask, you know? But what happened rather quickly is that I had to sort of like, sort of put a line in the sand and be like, hey, no, we're doing a show. This is not just, we're not just on the band break. You're not paying us in beer. No, we're doing a show. These are ticket prices. We're going to list them on a website. Your friends don't just come in. No, this is like this. You're going to sit down like a proper show. Like we are going to rehearse. Everybody's going to be sober. This is going to be great. Let's sew this together. Like not just stitch it up. Like it just all these things. And from there, I think that's where people started to stand up a little straighter and be like, oh, this actually does have validity. It's not just... a bunch of women randomly shaking around. This could be something. And it's amazing the, again, I go back to the financial impact of, like, technically burlesque is under the umbrella that is the sex industry, but we're like the kiddie pool, you know, like we're way over here. However, the industry as a whole has a huge impact on so many other things. And I think that sort of became rather clear to the venue owners and to the other people working with us, like, oh, this is a draw. Oh, wow, people are buying tickets. Oh, they are buying drinks. Oh, wow, this, I didn't, because I remember for years, I couldn't get a Friday or a Saturday date. They would only allow me to do shows on Sunday or Thursday, any off day, because we would, they didn't want it to cut into their money days. And it was only after being able to consistently show that we were bringing in money that then we got more opportunities.
That's interesting.
It's wild.
Yeah. And in a city like New Orleans, where we have the whole sort of, not only Mardi Gras, but the culture around that, right? The shows, the are we doing okay on time?
We're doing great. Which we have a show after, so if any of y'all want to come see it.
And I put it on our Facebook page.
I love that.
Yeah. There is this whole supporting thing, right? Where it's a production. So there is, there are costumes and there's lighting and there's sound and there's professionalism, is, you know, in a word, is what it is. It's a business. And you guys did that. You did that with Fleur de Tis from the beginning. And to think now it's been, whatever, 18 years, 17 years?
Oh, my gosh, a long time.
But that's amazing. I mean, you think of that in terms of like a Broadway show running that long.
Well, and so it's funny. We actually, and I'm going to toot my own horn here for this. During the pandemic, I was able to have an interview with the Wall Street Journal. And we were talking about the economic impact of the performing arts. And this is the thing that people don't recognize. If we do our jobs well, you shouldn't recognize us as an actual business. You should come and be transported. You're having fun. You're having drinks. Oh my God, that was amazing. But this does have a huge economic impact. It's the same thing as a wedding. People see the band and they're like, oh, somebody paid money for the band. But what they don't realize is that every plate on that table has a price point and has been rented. Every chair they're sitting on, every table, every linen, all these things that go into it that you don't recognize, but they do all sort of snowball into a bigger financial impact. So I don't know. That's one of the things that's been nice about, and it took me a while to actually take ownership of this, because I truly believe in teamwork, and I know it's not just me. There's always a group of people, even if it's the simplicity of like the bartenders you're working with are super important. But no, I think it's nice because when one of us rises up, we all rise, and it validates what we're doing as having weight and purpose as an art form rather than just being something that's And now I'm going off. You would think I had coffee. I just had a Sprite. But like, it's the same thing when we talk about jazz music. Like when jazz first came out, everybody's like, oh, what's that? You know, that's just at the time it silly little songs about dirty things. Why would I? And now, obviously, it has a huge economic impact, specifically with the city of New Orleans, but also as a foundation and basis for other musical elements or styles like bounce. Bounce is the same thing. People initially, when it came out, like, it's just a bunch of queer kids talking and shaking butts. And it has a, like, Big Frida is about to buy a hotel on Frenchman.
This is
insane. Like, it, and that all ties back into New Orleans. And again, it brings more income into the city. It's this wonderful cycle of generating people to come here to see what we do because we do it so well.
And you pointed out several times, I think, so they see you and others on stage, mm-hmm. but what they don't necessarily see, and not really their responsibility, but
they shouldn't.
It builds this industry mm-hmm. that's really important. I mean, again, I think about it in terms of Mardi Gras. When you see the floats, and you're thrilled to see the floats, but there's so many people employed behind the scenes to create the idea, to put it into action, to do all of that, much like your show,
in exactly. this,
right? And on the one hand, you don't want them to see that. It doesn't matter, right? They just should enjoy it. But that makes a real difference in people's lives in terms of jobs and careers and turning passion into something that you can make money off of and, you know, real industry in a sense that is sometimes just sort of lost, right? And if you're doing it well, it should be lost.
Exactly. Like nobody needs to know the nuts and bolts, but it in the back, whoever's in charge or whatever, like in the back of your head, it is interesting to me is that like when you talk about the floats, like where the floats are stored, mm-hmm. that's a huge mm-hmm. impact in industry because you have to have somebody who's literally there. The upkeep, just the cleaning, the maintenance,
right.
security. Like it sounds so silly, but that's they're employing people.
Mm-hmm.
For a silly float.
If you do go to Mardi Gras World and you see the artist, or you mm-hmm. go in the dens along, it's interesting, right? As a New Orleanian, you go down to Claiborne Avenue and a visitor just sees Claiborne Avenue and it's rough in parts and it's nicer in parts. And I see all of the dens and go, oh, there's a den, there's a den, there's a den. And there are artists in there almost all year long uh-huh. working on their craft. And there's somebody designing a storyboard and then actually executing that and all those skills. And that's one of the things. I don't want to get too far off of the actual performance, but I do think that it's an industry. And there's a credibility about the mm-hmm. fact that it's a real industry. It's not just this sort of, I'm looking at people who are mostly naked or mostly exposed, which is certainly fun and all of that. But there's a business.
Yeah. And going back to the, you know, looking at people that are exposed, it's funny, too, with the tease element and stuff. I feel burlesque is, I can give you a blanket statement that is the description. It's the mm-hmm. art of tease. But when you experience it, and this is why I encourage people to experience it, and not just once, but in different forms, it is very much, all dance is ephemeral in nature. You can only experience it in that moment, but it's very celebratory. You're like along the ride with the performer and it celebrates the performer. And I think it's like anything, the like jazz music, like cooking. Some people might be like, oh, well, I don't like sushi. It's like, well, have you tried this? Like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing. Oh, my God, I love it. So like, oh, I may not like this show. Well, okay. Did you try this show? Oh, I saw burlesque once. But you haven't seen it like this or haven't seen it like this. And there's so many variations and styles within the spectrum that is burlesque as well. Like there's a whole new genre called nerdlesque.
Okay.
It sort of came about with comic cons, or at mm-hmm. least that's the way I interpret it.
Okay.
But people like enact their favorite characters from TV shows, comic books, movies, and they do strip teases as that character, as that character would. And so, of course, like, you know, Harlequin is a naturally sort of more sultry character, but then you'll see other things like just completely random, like Belle from Beauty and the Beast or like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle or like, I don't know, anything. It's just bizarre. And it's really entertaining. It's really fun.
For some reason, I now want to see a burlesque show based on the Big Bang Theory. I don't
Why
know.
Why not? Right. You totally can. They have a Star Wars burlesque show. Like
Right. That's interesting to think about it as not just sort of one answer, right?
Yeah, it's not. I think most people, when they think burlesque, they think of one of two things, either the Christina Aguilera movie with Cher, which had mm-hmm. a lot of singing. And to me, that was more interpretive of cabaret, where it was a lot more sort of like costume stayed on and it was more about the vocals with group dances. Or they think about Dita Von Teese, who is the queen of burlesque. She's absolutely amazing, but she has a very glamorous approach to it. High quality costuming, sparkle. But with her, you don't necessarily get the playfulness or the comedy or, you know, the drag. And there's so much more to it than just that one mm-hmm. slice of the cake.
Yeah, it's pretty encompassing.
Yeah.
So you're making this very easy to. So you're. It's almost like you're reading my questions.
Oh, I love this.
Yes,
I'm not. Perfect. By the way, I'm not cheating.
No, you're not. I didn't give them to you ahead of time. But let's talk a little bit about how. So you have this one show that has run for essentially 17 years or so. But let's talk a little bit about the different variety of shows that you guys have under Trixie Minx Productions.
Yes, and Trixie Minx Productions. Well, I have to tell about that because that was to talk about the business of burlesque. I actually teach a class on this now. I was not prepared for this to be a business at all. I just wanted to be treated with respect. Like it literally was just like people, you would not believe how many, and I'm not going to say men, but venue owners that happen to be of a certain gender would be like, oh, we'll pay you in drinks. We'll pay. And as somebody who loves snacks, like, they never even once offered me a snack, which shame on them. But money is really nice.
Of course.
Like, with regards to functioning in society. However, what was so funny is I remember we had gone to a point where the show had gone so big, I actually had to formally become an LLC because we made enough money on the books. And it was like, oh, okay. And that's how Trixie Minx Productions was born. So it became the, again, sort of like hub where Fleur de Tees was the starting show. And then from there, we created Burlesque Ballroom, which was and still runs at the Jazz Playhouse in the Royal Sonesta. Mm-hmm. And that show to me is super special because it was a throwback show to what Bourbon Street Burlesque used to be. Mm-hmm. It's the only consistent running burlesque show on Bourbon Street with a live band that I know of. And if there's other ones, awesome. Like, the more the merrier. But we've been running that show for about a dozen years, and it was supposed to be our contemporary twist in that the space does not have a formal stage. So we do it as an interactive floor show, which what that means is that the dancers, while they may start on stage, they move throughout the room. So you have actual interactions with the performers. The other show that I have currently, which is the one we're at right now, is Minx Burlesque. This show started during the pandemic as a safe way to get people performing. There were no rules on the show other than you just had to show a negative COVID test. And we opened it up to everybody in the performance community, whether you were a burlesque dancer, a circus performer, a drag performer, a vocalist. It didn't matter. And we actually started it at DBA with everybody in separate corners of DBA. And it was a filmed show. Like, it was one of these virtual shows. Right. So we would have one person go on stage and then, like, run away. Then the other person would go on stage and then run away. And, like, everybody had their assigned corners.
Right.
We had, like, the, you know, the air filters running. However, when we were able to do it in person, we moved over to Howling Wolf, which is much larger and had all the air filters in place. And that's just where we kept it. And so it continues to run. I've had other shows that... Like, one of my favorite shows that I started was Bourbon Boylesque, which features an all-male cast, which was great. And that show took a break during COVID, has restarted, but not under my company, but one of my drag children, who I love very dearly, Ariana Moore. She runs it now, and it's been great to see that also continuing and growing. Yeah, so those are like our regular shows. And then of course, we do crazy things all over the place, too, because why not?
And you do things all over the country, too.
How do you know?
Because I do my homework.
I've been very fortunate to get an opportunity to perform throughout the United States and the world. There was a point in time in which I actually toured Australia with the New Orleans Bingo Show, which was wonderful, a highlight. I also got to go with them to the Kennedy Center, which was crazy because as a ballerina, that talk about full circle.
Yeah.
As a ballerina, I spent two summers of my youth training at the Kennedy Center with Suzanne Farrell, who is like, again, super ballet. And then to go back and do burlesque on the same like stage, the venues where we were rehearsing, was just wild. Yeah, I've had an opportunity to represent New Orleans and burlesque in Switzerland, in London, all over the place. And I'm just super grateful. Again, every time I have an opportunity to be here, I don't take it for granted. Extremely humbled to be that. I'm and surprised, quite honestly. Like, if you've lived in New Orleans and have not seen my tassels or tushy, what are you doing? Like, I've been around.
And that was part of doing the show. Now, when I put it in the Facebook group today, loads of people said, oh, I've seen the show. It's great. Or you should say hi to Trixie. But it's also surprising to me how many people don't. And I think it's their reticence about what they're going to see, right?
Oh, completely. And to them, I'd say I felt exactly the same way. So I totally understand where you're coming from. I had a preconceived idea that burlesque was stripping for people that couldn't cut it as strippers. Like, I was like, oh, these are the girls that aren't as good or whatever. And the funny thing is there's a lot of crossover, surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, but to me it was surprising. But I was more just, I don't know. I sort of had my nose up about the situation. And then when I experienced it, I was like, I didn't know. And I think that, again, sort of ties into you with this podcast and people that are keeping track of the history, is that you don't, there's not a lot of writing about this, because whoever has been in charge has been like, it's fluff. It's like, it's a side piece. Like, you know, the main entree is the jazz music. And it's like, no, it all is there. It all goes together. How could you not enjoy and celebrate it all? And I do think that if all it takes is somebody to come to the show and they don't have to like it, they can say, well, that was horrible. And then we've wasted an hour of your life. And I am so sorry for that. But then at least you know.
Oh, come on. Like, you're in New Orleans and you're having a good time.
And exactly. It's like, I don't think it's a bad thing. And also, nobody needs to love it. But I do think that, you know, we are fortunate to all be here on this planet, as messy and crazy and weird as it is. So why not experience everything it has to offer?
And I think particularly in New Orleans. So today alone, you could see a carnival parade that mocks a very austere carnival parade.
Oh, yes.
So you could see T-Rex, which I think is going to pass right in front of where we are tonight. You could have gone to see a second line this morning, or this early afternoon. You can see your show tonight. Mm-hmm. You can see live music all over the place. And you can have great food in between at any price point, right?
Yes.
So, and you can do all of that within a mile of here.
You probably can go to church too.
Yeah,
like,
you
know?
That's right. In fact, you could walk out of here and walk right down to St. Patrick's, I guess, right? You could do that. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is, and I hope this doesn't make you blush, and it's probably hard to make you blush, but I think that your impact on this industry here, now there are all kinds of other productions in the city. So while people, I definitely think, should come see a Trixie Minx show, there are options now. When you think about where you were starting out, there was one or two options, and it was very kind of, it was this or nothing. That's not the case now in the city.
No, and this, again, like, it doesn't make me blush, as it's taken a minute. It was funny. I had received the 40 Under 40 Award.
Yeah.
And when I received that, I was like, oh, you know, it's everybody. It's like, it's hard for me to, I'm not the best at just saying thank you. I'm like, oh, it's like praise is a little, I don't know. I want to share with everybody. But it was one of my friends who was like, no, own it. And I do have to say, like, with the start of Fleur de Tease, I think that was a phenomenal example of a dancer can run a show. Because the show that was running was, that I was a part of, was not run by a dancer. It was run by somebody else. And the other show was sort of this true democracy where everybody was sort of working it together, but there wasn't necessarily a specific leader. It was very much a group, like, let's all come together. And with me, it was like, I'm a dancer, but I'm going to take the role of producer, and I'm going to still be able to be on both ends, like, perform. Would not encourage it, frankly, because it's a lot more work and a lot more stress. But after seeing that, that's where you had the spinoffs of a Slow Burn Burlesque, which unfortunately doesn't run anymore, but went on, and multiple other burlesque troupes like that. And the funny thing is again, like, history is, it cycles. It continues on. There's been newer people coming into the game and see what happens. Like, oh, well, I want to do that. I want to do a different version of it. And it's beautiful to see how it grows.
Yeah. And I am with you. I am a firm believer in kind of the rising all ships, right? So it's not so great necessarily to have a monopoly. It's much better to have a selection, and then you kind of help each other up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which, completely, you didn't see this coming, but I'm going to do it anyways. This is just saying, if you do want to get into burlesque, we decided to open up Trixie's Burlesque Boutique and Studio. Oh, did I break? Oh,
once again, you got it. Go ahead.
I'm answering questions before they're asked. But that's been great. That was, so the whole reason we started that was during the pandemic when we couldn't perform. I was like, I need to get my performers money. I need to do something. So we had this concept of, some of the performers make costumes, some make hair accessories, some make pasties, some make jewelry, some make candles. It didn't matter what they made. Just the fact that I was a performing artist that created something, I was like, let me buy it all from you and I'm going to sell it at a shop. But that way I was able to get the money up front. And the same thing with the studio aspect. We could not perform, but you could teach classes. So we were able to share what we do with other people. And so we do offer classes that are just party classes, like for bachelorettes, birthdays, whatever. But we also offer our burlesque fundamentals workshop, which the next one's happening right after Mardi Gras. There's just a few spots left if y'all want to join. But the first graduating class did so well that all of them are now still, they haven't necessarily quit their day jobs just yet, but they're mm-hmm. performing, mm. All except one. Who was like, no, she's a much older woman. She's like, I just wanted to try and I'm done. But they are doing so well that they actually started their own troupe and they're now performing at like an arts market once a month. And it's, one of them is going to be in the show tonight too, actually.
Really?
It's so great to see them evolve and grow. And what I like, again, they deserve all the credit. They're the ones that are doing the performance. But what makes me so happy and really makes me feel good is that I love that I'm able to offer some guidance and some knowledge, whereas mm-hmm. I was blindly throwing spaghetti at a wall, literally with pasties, just being like, what sticks? What literally sticks? Not like there was a lot of drama. This is nice where they have resources. They have an actual proper studio with proper mirrors and like floors, and they get to see costumes and work with us on costumes and concepts and movement and just simple things that were not accessible to me that all mm-hmm. of a sudden I'm able to openly provide to everybody else.
Sure. And we'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, please. But I can't wait to see who joins.
But where is the shop?
Oh, yes. The shop is located conveniently at 834 Charters. So close to Jackson Square. Yeah, y'all should come by. Even if you don't want to take a class, just come in by and see what we have and what we do. It's our big hope is to actually work with the Burlesque Hall of Fame in Vegas to get part of rotating exhibits so that we have a little wall in the dance studio that's just blank.
Nice.
That we want to dedicate towards burlesque history.
Mm-hmm. I got to say, when you opened the shop in the last year or so, has it
been ready? Actually opened Easter. Well, so that was the funny thing is we tried to get it moving when all the pandemic restrictions were still happening. By the time we got it okayed and everything legal and stuff, that's when everything lifted. So right. It's been like, oh, I didn't realize I started another business. Oh my.
Right.
Yeah. We've opened Easter 2022.
Okay.
So it's almost been a year.
And when you opened it, I thought, that's really interesting. Like, what is this going to be about? But it's been fun to watch. And one of the things I should say is you are a terrific follow on social media. And I think because it gets to something you said earlier, like, is it titillating and tease? And yes. But you also like have this amazing ability, in my opinion, to tell a story on social media, which is not easy to do. And so you somehow, and obviously you are a performer, but are able to take that performance and put it in these little like nuggets of things on social media. And so if you have a preconceived notion about burlesque and about burlesque performers, I would encourage you to follow you because, and again, we'll put links because it's fun and you take everyday things like, I don't know, something broke in your house and you're like, how do I turn this into
my home renovation? Right? That was,
how do I turn this into
followed me along that?
But you somehow made it comical and fun and somewhat seductive and also like every man's problem or every person's problem, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, this is all going wrong and I'm still going to be kind of cheery and silly about it. And I think that's a really kind of breaking down barriers about what this is, right?
Thank you so much for saying that because I joke about this and I'm not sure if we're getting the sounds in the background, but all right.
Yeah.
So we're setting up for a show, so tables are moving. But I like to say, I am Roger Rabbit, but I present as Jessica Rabbit. So if y'all are familiar with that movie, I have always been a clown. I can't help it. I'm goofy. I'm just like, I'm not cool. I've never been cool. I've always been the nerd. Like, I'm a geek. But the thing is people see me and they see how I present and they just think, oh, she must be holier than thou, or like she's only wearing heels and drinking champagne, and you know, which all right, I'll roll with it, you know. But that's been one of the nice sort of, I feel like everything has a silver lining, and I feel like with the pandemic, that was the true silver lining, was since we weren't able to do our regular lives. I'd always had a presence on social media, but it was more to promote shows, and mm-hmm. since I wasn't able to work, I used it as an opportunity just to entertain myself and others for free, no charge, just like, let's make everybody laugh. And it was so funny how many people were like, I didn't know you were funny. And I was like, all you had to do was come to a show. But, and that's also been another thing. I was hosting Bourbon Boylesque pre-pandemic, but during the pandemic is truly when I started hosting more. And that's actually what I do on this show, on Minx Burlesque. Mm-hmm. And I found a true love, not only for performance, but hosting, so much so that I just recently hosted a burlesque festival here in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And everybody, again, was like, we didn't know you could. And again, You gave me the mic, so I said I could talk. I didn't say I could do it well, but I will take over. I am out of control. I couldn't talk for years as a ballerina. And now, like, people are like, what do you got to say? I'm like, well, let me tell you.
In fact, I think, so here's an idea for you. I think there's a potential show around the home renovation.
Ooh.
I really do.
Like, it was, okay, for anybody that knows, what I should have done was hired an actual contractor that was good and paid the money the way like most people do. What we tried to do was do it ourselves. That was bad. I don't ask random people to do splits or twirl tassels. No, that's crazy talk. So why I thought I could build a wall is beyond me.
Well, it was amusing.
It was very entertaining. I learned so much. And what I learned above everything is it's best to hire a contractor.
There you go. So as we start to wrap up, because again, we are preparing for a show, I do want to talk a little bit, or have you talk a little bit about, you've talked about industry and things, but one of the other things you've really consciously tried to do is help local musicians and help musicians and others in these kind of service entertainment industries with healthcare and rights and affordable things. So can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I am a big fan of giving back to the community. And I think that, again, Katrina was sort of the highlighting experience of like, if you want to be here, you have to have roots. And if you want to have roots, you have to contribute. It's not enough to simply just exist. You have to participate. Even if it's the simplicity of going to a live show, you are participating in the culture. And I found out about New Orleans Musicians Clinic. And at the time, I tried to participate with them. I did a little bit of volunteer work here and there. But the way I understood it was like they geared towards musicians, which again, is fine, totally fine. I believe we helped with the blood drive they did where we were naughty nurses and you basically had like a burlesque dancer hold your hand while you gave blood or give you a sticker, just again, something to encourage people to come to give blood. And I was, it's funny because this parade's running tonight. Crude Illusion had reached out and said, we want you to be the queen of Crude Illusion, whatever year it was. I can't remember now. I think it was 2012 or 15, I don't know. It was a year. And they said, whatever charity you want is the charity we're going to have our, like, you know, fundraising money go to. And without a shadow of a doubt, I said New Orleans Musicians Clinic. But that's when I truly got to connect with everybody there. And that's when I found out that they do offer services beyond just because the musicians are in the name. They actually offer services to culture bearers, to Mardi Gras Indians, to service industry workers. That includes the people who are cooking the food, the people who are running the food, your bartenders, and dancers. And that to me was mind-blowing because as a dancer, my career in ballet ended because of a broken ankle. And I was lucky enough to have insurance at the time. Most of the performers you see can't afford insurance.
Right.
And if they are, they're on Medicaid or Medicare. And it's a system. Like you would not believe how many people I talked to that they've waited in line at hospitals for something that really could have been an easy fix, but there's no other resource for them. Or they're just simply not aware of it. And that's when we started working with the Musicians Clinic. I say we because it's me, my team, everybody on it, which I should mention my business partner, Emily Connolly.
Yep.
She joined me a couple years ago, but we were originally ballerinas together. So again, we have the same approach to we want artists to have a better experience than we did. Like we want to pave the way to make it easier and easier for each generation coming after us. But with Musicians Clinic, I'm very glad to work on programming with them where we offer preventative health medicine, even so much so that at the boutique and studio, we have a free class that we offer every other Monday for no reason than just to offer it, whether it's yoga, Pilates, acupuncture, acupressure. It's just this concept of we want people to be healthy because if they're not healthy, they can't work. And if they can't work, they can't make money. And it's this terrible thing where it's like in some jobs, you get paid a salary no matter what. But in our industry, you don't. If you don't show up, you don't get paid. And these people have families. They have kids. You know, it's more than just what you see on stage, you know, and you know, college payments or whatever. Like, so it's important that people are healthy physically, mentally, and then that way we get to enjoy all they have to offer us.
Yeah. And again, I intentionally, pun intended, wanted to pull back the curtain a little bit on that. I want people to come and enjoy a show and think about nothing more than enjoying the show. But I also want them to know one person's example, yours, about all of these kind of layers of the onion that it impacts. You know, your show, again, I hope the room is filled tonight.
And
there's lots of other things to do, but I hope it's filled and I hope people just have a good time and don't overthink it. But I also do want people to at some point think about, gosh, there's all these other things. So we're going to wrap up because I know you got a show to prepare for and I'm looking forward to it.
Yay.
But thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. And don't be a stranger. We can always do a part two.
We can. Why not? We will have links to your website, to the studio. I also want to kind of link to not only Howlin' Wolf. Thank you, Howlin' Wolf, for letting us be here. But places to check out Burlesque in New Orleans. Thanks also to our sponsor, the Historic New Orleans Collection. A special thanks to my Patreon supporters, especially our newest patrons at the $10 level or higher, including Terry Lynn Massey, Jeff Willis, Will Eil, Nathan Pickle, and Kathy Hallowell. If you want to support the show as a patron, go to patreon.com/beyondbourbonst. And last but not least, be sure to pick up a copy of my travel guide called Beyond Bourbon Street, An Insider's Guide to New Orleans. It's available online at many local stores and local bookstores and from me directly. And again, links to all that in the show notes. With that, I'm going to turn it over to my daughters to close us out who have no idea about the topic. But someday, Olivia and Sophia, you will get to listen and hopefully smile and enjoy it.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do.
Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.